This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Spotlight on eWomen, the place for everything eWomen Network. Entrepreneur, enterprising, enlightening, and exciting. Please welcome your eWomen host, Phyllis Smith.
Hello, hello. I am so happy that you chose to listen to Spotlight on eWomen Network today. My name is Phyllis Smith. So the topic today is near and dear to my heart because besides working for eWomen Network, I am also a certified health coach and yoga instructor. And one thing that really makes me sad and frustrated is people who try every diet that crosses their path. They lose weight and then only to gain it back again and then some. The fact is, folks, until you can get it together on the inside and clear up your emotional and psychological issues, it is nearly impossible to lose weight and sustain it. Really, I mean, the truth is we need to get away from the concept of losing weight altogether because really anybody can lose weight. But what we really need to do is hone in on living a healthy lifestyle where you feel great all the time. That's a tough nut to crack. We know that. But today I have someone who is going to help you get that journey, begin that journey towards your healthy, sustainable, wonderful, beautiful life that you deserve. And today joining us is award-winning health coach and lifestyle expert. And she takes that exact approach with her clients, diving deep into what's going on under the hood, so to speak, to help you develop, create, and sustain a healthy lifestyle. She is one of our esteemed eWomen Network premier success coaches. Please welcome Kay Loffrey. Kay, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So do you agree that in general, most diets don't work?
I do. And even the word diet, I think, throws some people into a tailspin. So it means restriction. And I often call it a prison diet because it means depriving myself of the things I'd really like to have to eat. And so it's not really in mentally a very positive connotation.
And you have suffered from the yo-yo dieting in your life, so you can really speak to this firsthand.
Absolutely. I am a nutritionist and dietitian, and even while being a health professional, I was struggling with my weight. And it really started way before that. And, you know, I believe that all progress starts with telling the truth. So I'll tell you my truth, and my truth was that I was in hiding as I struggled with my weight, and I was weighed down by a trauma. And my trauma, my story is that when I was 8 years old, I was sexually abused, and it made me feel ashamed and unprotected and powerless and worthless. And it made me feel powerless because it happened a number of times. And so after that, I started eating to comfort myself, and food was my escape. And as you mentioned, Phyllis, I yo-yo dieted for years, actually well into my adulthood. And it just became, dieting became a sort of a obsession, a way to protect me against my worst fear, which is unwanted attention.
So your weight... Were you very heavy?
It was more like losing and gaining 15 pounds at a time, like 25 times. So, you know, you add it up. The heaviest I ever was about 160, and I'm pretty short. But it was just the fact that it was over and over and over again, and it's so frustrating. And that's what I hear from people when I give presentations, how frustrating it is to fail at dieting.
What is it about that emotional trauma that you experienced? If it wasn't food, would it be something else? Does food become kind of that addiction that helps soothe the pain so you don't have to think about it.
Yeah, it could have been anything else. Could have been drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, or some combination. Because I started doing this, you know, early, when I was 8 years old, I started using food as an escape. I didn't have those other elements hadn't been introduced. But, I was really trying to make myself invisible was really the whole thing, because I realized I just felt like I wasn't good enough. And I blamed myself, and I told myself, you know, I should have known what was going on. I should have, you know, I held myself responsible for something that I really was a betrayal.
And when you would eat the food, what did it feel like for you?
Well, it was just a numbing. It was, you know, I think that's what happens with a lot of people. It's just easy to numb those emotions. You numb everything out, the good emotions, the bad emotions, and it just feels, you know, you're just wrapped up in this momentary satisfaction, which seems to be missing in life.
When did you know that you were eating for emotional reasons?
I knew it gut level all of the time. I didn't think about it, but I knew that I was trying to make myself feel better. It's just a gut thing. I think most of the people I see who do emotional eating in my clinic, they know it. They're like very positive. Yes, I eat from stress. I eat when I'm angry. You know, it's not like maybe. It's a yes or no.
What do you think is going on, even on a psychological level, that instead of speaking their emotions, expressing their emotions, that they use something else to numb it? What happens that prevents you from expressing that? What were the words, what was the lessons you learned as a child to not express your emotions?
Well, I think if you don't feel like you're good enough, you're already ashamed, and that feeling of shame is very isolating, and it's a situation where you are in hiding. So the last thing you kind of want to do is be really talk about it, and you don't want to admit it even to yourself. So the idea of emotional eating from emotions is part of running away from ourselves. You know, we don't have to think about it. Let's think about the muffin. Let's think about the chocolate brownie. We don't have to look inside. As you said, looking under the hood. I love that expression.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And I've also learned in years past, years ago, I remember I had a radio show and I interviewed somebody who wrote a book on emotional eating. And one of the things I thought was an aha. It was very actually aha for me and quite interesting, is that there are different types of food for different emotions. So the frustration might be you're going to eat, you know, a bunch. You might eat crunchy foods, you know. Do you find that as well?
Well, some people say they like crunchy, but I mostly find that the addiction is around fat, sugar, and salt. You know, those are the things that, you know, within the food keep one coming back for more and more.
And if someone, as you say, doesn't feel worthy, so they don't want to speak their emotions because they feel that what they have to say isn't valuable. Is that kind of part of it?
Yeah. Well, not even what they have to say, that they aren't valuable, that they aren't worthy of being taken care of. They aren't worthy of love. And that's really the turnaround. The real turnaround is to be able to discover, you know, to be honest with yourself about who you are and start accepting the parts you don't like and the parts you do like, and having compassion, having a bit of sense of humor, being willing to love yourself, sort of warts and all, if you will.
And, which, you know, is much easier said than done.
Yes, and some people, you know, feel like I'm too short, I'm too old, I'm too young, I'm too this, I'm too that. And but yes, there are some fairly simple, straightforward ways that those things can be addressed. Mm-hmm. Simple, but not necessarily easy.
Right, and we're going to go in that in a little bit. You know, it's really amazing. I have a daughter who's 23, and she's absolutely beautiful, and she's always been beautiful, inside and out. I mean, she is kind and lovely and talented. She's a very talented artist. And when she was in elementary school, we were just having this conversation the other day that she's still tormented by the boys who liked her two friends more than her because she says they were skinnier than she was. And she's just voluptuous. I mean, she's got lots of gorgeous curves. But in elementary school, she had a beautiful little figure too, you know. This was not someone who had weight issues or anything like that. But yet that's how she saw herself. And,
right.
And of course, as a parent, I'm like, God, where did I go wrong? How did she not know? We've told her all the time how beautiful she was. But it's, you know, it doesn't matter what someone says. Do you think that some people are kind of born with that kind of sensitivity? I know it sounds crazy, but I am telling you, I never stopped telling my kids how fabulous and beautiful and talented and this and that. But she's being an artist is very visual. So she'd look in the mirror. She sees a canvas. You know, my face is too round. It's not this. It's not my nose is this. It's so hard to, you know, for even as parents to start shaping our kids to, but it's really not ultimately necessarily up to us. How do they, like, what do we do? How do we get our kids to know that they're okay, you know?
Right. That's a very good observation because it is about early messages, but it's not all about parents because if you think of all the advertising and all the celebrities, I mean, the celebrities have to be stick thin. And if anybody, mm-hmm. you know, has to lose weight, I mean, they're crucified in the press and in the women's magazines. You know, Michelle Obama has a little bump. Maybe she had constipation that day. You know, who knows?
Uh-huh.
But, you know, always trying to find, you know, the least little thing with our celebrities. So we're taught from the societal level that, you know, what it is to be good enough. And I think that she, and probably at school, I mean, the school is a culture as well. And the girls in a school setting pick all that up. And they're comparing themselves with each other. And just like you observed, she was comparing herself with her schoolmates. And I too, had one client who is probably the most beautiful woman I have ever seen. Gorgeous, drop-dead gorgeous. And she thought that she was fat and ugly because she had two friends that were skinnier than she was.
Mm-hmm.
It's like our concept of ourselves can be very distorted based on the opinions of other people. So it's taking that back instead of looking at the opinions and believing the opinions of other people, reshaping our ideas, our thoughts, our mindset. I mean, that's what it really boils down to, is reclaiming our thoughts, taking those early messages. You know, you might have heard this message, Phyllis, I don't know, always clean your plate. You know, a lot of my clients come in and say their grandmother told them that because there was a depression. And so now they're battling with weight issues because it was an early message that they now have to disconnect from their internal messaging.
What do you say to people outside looking in? I mean, you go to a restaurant and you see an overweight, heavy, obese person eating a dessert. I'm sorry, you know, people will say they shouldn't be eating that. So what do you say to those people about that person who is obese and still, you know, eating that dessert or not doing what, you know, what the society thinks they should be doing.
Right. Well, what I tell my clients is, if you think back to Prohibition, what did that do? All it did was drive drinking underground. People were drinking more than ever. There were speakeasies. So by, you know, making something forbidden, it just makes it more alluring. So what I tell people is, be sure to eat some of your comfort foods. If you love chocolate, if you love donuts, be sure to include that in what you eat. But you're going to want to be very selective in how often and how much. So you say, oh, I love cheesecake. Well, I'm going to be sure and have a piece of cheesecake once a month, for example. So it's just a matter then of nothing is forbidden, and so there's no cheating. And I believe that cheating sets people up for failure.
Even the word is so negative and destructive. We have to take a short break. But coming up, how to get to the bottom of your emotional eating triggers and begin to take steps to kick those nasty habits starting today, right after this message.
Hi, I'm Dr. Maish Seibel, a leading authority on women's wellness and menopause. When my wife, Sharon, had her ovaries removed to prevent cancer, she was immediately thrown into early menopause. She needed estrogen to relieve her symptoms, but her doctors weren't sure if it was safe or if it would cause breast cancer. I had to know the truth. After years of research, I discovered there was an estrogen window, a window of opportunity to take estrogen that lowers disease risk and increases estrogen's effectiveness on symptoms. I realize there are millions of other women who are also confused and fearful of taking estrogen. That's why I wrote The Estrogen Window, which just hit number one bestseller status on Amazon. Find out what women are so excited about. Order your copy now at estrogenwindowbook.com.
Welcome back to Spotlight on eWomen. Here's your host, Phyllis Smith.
And welcome back. We're having such an interesting, important conversation with Tay Loughry. She is an eWomen Network Premier Success Coach, an award-winning health coach, lifestyle expert, nutritionist, dietitian, and someone who has experienced and suffered her own issues around food had her own trauma at an early age, sexual abuse, and then dealt with yo-yo dieting for a good part of her life. And now she's helping other people to overcome those issues. And one thing, Kay, I just loved something that you said just before we went to the break, that that people when you think of diet, really, let's think of diet deprivation. Diet deprivation, it's like one and the same. And when you're deprived of something, as you said, like in Prohibition, what happens? Speakeasies open up. People are going to drink somehow, some way, because they're told they can't. And so your method, what I love your concept is, if you love a certain type of food, if you love a donut, if you like, you know, chocolate cake, whatever it is, make sure that when you come up with your diet plan that you include that so you don't feel like you're being deprived. I love that. That's so important to know. So, and, you know, Kay and I, we both share the same passion for helping people overcome their weight struggles by tackling their inner struggles first. Because if you really can't come to grips with that, it's going to be so hard to maintain any kind of weight loss program, or let's say healthy living program. Don't you agree, Kay, that if that's really what it's more about? It's about creating a healthy lifestyle.
Absolutely. And from the inside out. So that's why what I do is really about making people feel whole again. And, you know, the losing the weight's a result, but it is one of a number of results of discoveries that people discover so much more than just losing weight and feel so good about themselves. They feel so accomplished, which is really, think the most exciting part of the whole thing.
Is that feeling of accomplishment.
Absolutely. They feel so proud of themselves. And you think about a lot of people who are overweight, they feel so ashamed of themselves in contrast. Mm. So I think, what's very exciting is that I mentioned that people can choose to eat their favorite foods, but it's how often and how much. So along the same lines, you can choose your thoughts, you can choose your feelings, and you can choose your future. So it's being a lot more conscious and selective overall about your lifestyle.
The thing is that it's so hard when you're used to living a certain way. I want to ask you, you said 15 years you were yo-yo dieting. You were standing, feeling a sense of shame and unworthiness up and down and dieting 15 pounds gain, 15 pounds loss. What was it that got you to stop?
Well, I think it was actually 25 times.
So being
a rather slow learner. But eventually I just got fed up and I looked fear in the eye and I said, enough. I said, I am not doing this anymore. And I think that's kind of like, rock hitting bottom. You finally say, no more. And mm-hmm. So that's when I began the process of healing. And I discovered how to turn trauma into growth and how to free myself. And, that took, wasn't trivial. It took time. It took effort. It took people helping me along the way. It took self-discovery. The original self-help movement, I must have signed up for the very first round of that and mm-hmm. never stopped. But, I made me realize through all that it takes more than pills, potions, and shakes and bars to become whole again and free yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's why, I really love to help people, as you said, lift the hood and see what's really going on, because it's just too easy to try something superficial that's just not going to work.
Yeah. So what does work?
Well, what does work is really looking at, as we said, lifting up the hood, looking at what's inside, and begin to, as I mentioned, be honest with yourself, being a little more forgiving of yourself, and listening to what are those old tapes? What are those early messages that you're still, you're still rerunning them over and over again? I've got to clean the plate. I should do this. I should do that. So that's one of the things that is being aware, being more conscious, using some techniques. And I have a lot of tools that I use with people, including meditation and affirmations and that kind of thing, to become more self-aware. But instead of being so busy trying to please everybody else in the world and trying to do everything for everybody, it's very important to take a little time out for yourself each day. And I think that's probably the biggest tip that I could give people. Taking 15 minutes of you time out each day allows you to kind of reflect on, well, what am I thinking? What are those early tapes? And to see where you are and where you want to go, and being able to choose what from your past do you want to bring into your future, instead of just kind of, being like you're riding a horse and you're just letting that horse go any direction that it wants to. That's living unconsciously.
Yes, and looking at the concept of what in your past do you want to take with you? Where do you want to go on your journey? You're traveling. Your future is your big vacation, your big travel. What are you going to take?
Uh-huh.
Do you want to take all that crap that that brought you down, that made you feel crappy, or you want to feel good, so what are you going to take? And I love that imagery of thinking about it in that way. So What about the idea of once you become aware of those messages that bring you down, destructive messages that bring you down and cause you to engage in some of these habits that cause you to not just gain weight, but feel crappy about, you know, I mean, there's food that's just bad for you that just doesn't make you feel good. And so even once you've gained that awareness, what about the idea, or even before that, Kay, what about the idea of knowing why you want to do that to begin with? There's got to be that point of you decide, like you did, I'm not going to take, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore and I'm making a change.
Right.
Right? So you have to have, my thoughts are a why. Why do you want to make that change?
Mm-hmm.
How do you tap into that?
It has to be a really important change, and it has to be crystal clear, because if you are a person that, you know, is confronted with a food that's a trigger food, let's say, you know, you find yourself next to a McDonald's and you want to go for a Blizzard, you know, one of those milkshakes that's 800 calories, well, what is going to counteract that? What is so strong in your mind that is going to counteract that? So, you know, is it something like, if I die young, I'm never going to see my grandchildren. I'm never going to see them graduate from high school. And, you know, when I have grandchildren, I'm not going to be able to play with them. So do I want to be able to play with my grandchildren and be alive, or do I want a Blizzard milkshake? Mm-hmm. So it has to be choices. You know, do I want A or do I want B? Mm-hmm. And, you know, making a conscious choice. And so you make a very good point about your why. You know, what is powerful enough to counteract that heavy temptation? Now, once in a while, you might say, okay, I'm not going to make these Blizzards or the donuts off limits. I'm going to have it. Well, that's one thing. But if it's just, you know, you just come upon something and you really wish you wouldn't do it, but you're feeling, you know, you're teetering, then that's the moment. You have a split second to go to your why and, you know, say, I want to, you picture yourself, you know, playing in the backyard with your kids versus a Blizzard. You know, that, it's got to be A or it's got to be B. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And it, folks, it's not easy. You know, don't think it's easy. You know, it's addiction. Addiction is really hard to kick. And you're used to doing things a certain way, but you got to work at it because guess what? You're worth it. And I think it's knowing you're worth it, that is going to get you to stop. What is my why? I'm worth it. I want to move on. But the other thing that's so important, as you brought up, is that awareness. Take 15 minutes, like you say, every day for yourself. And think about that. Think about, one way I have learned that happiness doesn't just fall in your lap. You have to work at it sometimes, you know, because stuff's going to come up. Challenges are going to come up no matter what. Let's say even if you overcome your past, you know, challenges are going to come up. How are you going to deal with that? You've got to work at it. And I also want to say one other thing, and Kay, tell me if you agree with this. It's hard not to. That one way to start putting your mindset into a positive mindset is to start thinking about what you're grateful for.
Yeah, that's one of the top five. I have five techniques for refueling your resilience, and that's one of the main ones. And in fact, I'm a big fan of Martin Seligman, who is the founder of positive psychology, and he talks about having that gratitude to build. It's evidence based that when you're grateful, it builds optimism. So here's a little, you know, very easy exercise that everybody on listening to this call can do. So if every day you were to write down three things you're grateful for and why over,